Welcome to Great Loop Radio, brought to you by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. We're dedicated to sharing Great Loop information and inspiration with those actively cruising, planning for, or dreaming about a Great Loop adventure. This is Kim Russo, the director of AGLCA. Today, my guest is Captain Henry Marks, who, of course, is with Landfall. Many of you know Henry, and he has been a longtime sponsor of AGLCA, which we certainly appreciate. We are going to talk with Henry about one of his areas of expertise, which is the safety equipment that you need aboard for the Great Loop. Before I introduce Henry, though, I just want to take a moment to recognize and thank our Admiral sponsors who support AGLCA at the highest level. They are Curtis Stokes & Associates, Dog River Marina, Passage Maker Trawler Fest, Skipper Bob Publications, United Yacht Sales of the Carolinas, and Waterway Guide Media. As always, we encourage our listeners to support these businesses that support the Great Loop. And now I'd like to bring in Captain Henry Marks. Henry, thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, good afternoon, Kim. While a loop is mostly an inland route, there are some open water passages like Lake Michigan, parts of the Gulf of Mexico, plus if you go to the Bahamas or Cuba, the side trips across the Gulf Stream can be challenging. Also remember that you're on a boat and you're not in your living room, and the sound of running water probably isn't a good thing.
That's a very good point. Like you said, the loop is definitely, it's a very safe trip, and a lot of people do undertake it because it is mostly inland cruising. But you're right, there are some open water passages. So with that in mind, can you run us through some of the, let's start with the Coast Guard required safety equipment that you must have on board.
Okay, if you get the Coast Guard recreational boating pamphlet, I'm only going to talk about safety equipment here. I'm not going to get into the engine room. For the Coast Guard, you have to have a PFD. That is a life jacket, a Coast Guard-approved life jacket for everybody on the vessel. And if you have children, remember to watch the weight classes because children's life jackets come in different sizes, 0 to 30, 30 to 50, 50 to 90 pounds. And you can't put a 10-pound kid in a 90-pound life jacket because it won't work, and the Coast Guard won't buy it either. You need a Type 4 throwable device if you're over 16 feet, which that is the yellow horseshoe or a life ring that you see on all boats. Visual distress signals. You're required to have visual distress signals, which are a lot of things. We all mostly refer to them as flare kits. Fire extinguishers. You need. I like one in each compartment. The Coast Guard pamphlet talks about, depending on vessel size, they have a couple of classifications. Just check the, depending on how big your boat is and how the compartments are laid out. But what I like is I like a 5-pound Halon or Halotron fire extinguisher in each compartment. If it's in a berthing compartment and there's a fire, and if nothing else, you can use that fire extinguisher to get out of the compartment. Horn. Vessels over, I think, 16 feet have to have a horn. You can use an air horn, or most powerboats, of course, have electric horns, which are much more reliable and easier. And while navigation lights are probably not safety equipment, you really need navigation lights. And check the lenses on your navigation lights because they tend to craze with age. And when they craze, the visibility goes down, and your navigation lights are important. It's not a stealth operation.
Of course not. So that's kind of the bare minimum. That's what the Coast Guard is going to require you to have. But there certainly are other pieces of safety gear that you would want to have on board for some long-term cruising like the Great Loop. So tell us what you would recommend in addition to those Coast Guard requirements. What should we do above and beyond that?
Well, for life jackets, I recommend inflatable life jackets. And Spinlock makes a deck vest light, which is ideal for this. It's inexpensive. It's inflatable, meaning it's much more comfortable to wear. And whenever you're docking, if you're in a lock, you have to have a life jacket on. And if you're going ashore in a dinghy, you're supposed to have a life jacket in the dinghy. Might as well put it on because dinghies do tip over. And I like the inflatables. Whether you want to spend the money for all of your guests to have an inflatable, that's your call. The foam ones are just fine for that. But just remember, an inflatable vest has to be worn to be counted by the U.S. Coast Guard. Throwable device, a horseshoe life ring I referred to before, is the basics. There's a device called a life sling, which is basically a horseshoe with 125 feet of floating line on it. And if somebody falls overboard, you deploy the line, and then you just drive your boat in a circle around them like you're picking up a water skier, stop the boat, turn off the engines, and pull them aboard. We have a new device called a Dan buoy, which I'm really fond of. It's a canvas pouch, and it has a bag that you throw overboard. Somebody goes overboard, and when it hits the water, it inflates into a pylon. That's about a 6-inch diameter yellow tube that sticks up about 8 feet off the water, and that enables you to find the person in the water. If you're in the harbor, not such a big deal. If you're in Lake Michigan with 6-foot seas, trying to find that little head bobbing around out there, it can be a little tricky. Flare kit. I like the Solus flares because they're far superior in visibility, and they don't cost that much more. The thing that's new on the market is called a Sirius light. This is a light that's sold by Williams & Plath as a manufacturer, but it's a handheld or thrown plastic light that floats, and when you screw the top down hard, it flashes white SOS, dot, dash, dot, dash, so on. I'm not big. They claim that this is a replacement for your flare kit. I'm not sold on that because I don't think a flashing white light is going to say danger to anybody. But once you've had made your distress call on the radio and people are looking for you, this Sirius light will burn for 60 hours on one set of batteries. If you light off a handheld flare, you get about 2.5 minutes. So I really think it's a great device to add. Also, this Sirius light, if you remember to just turn it on before you throw it, makes a great man overboard life if somebody goes overboard in the dark. It floats and is bright and it flashes. Fire extinguishers, again, I like Halotron or CO2 over the dry powder. I once had a fire in the galley where else, and we put the fire out with a dry powder fire extinguisher. And 2 years later, I was still vacuuming up dry powder in the vacuum cleaner out of the carpet. The CO2, they tell you not to use it on electrical fires, but when all else fails. But again, check your boat and the requirements on that. Sound signals, a horn is a good thing. Medical kit. Medical kits come in many different shapes and sizes, and they all have number of people and distance from medical care on the label. Depending on how far you're going, how remote you're going to be, you need a bigger medical kit. With it, you want a medical kit, you want a first aid manual that is easy to read. You want one that you can understand. You don't want some medical school textbook that you really won't understand how to do it. You want something with lots of pictures. And I like the book called Marine Medicine by Dr. Michael Jacobs, who's a sailor himself.
Henry, is there any medical training or first aid training, you know, as far as talking about looking at the pictures in the event that you need to do some medical care for someone, is there anything you recommend that people do ahead of time before they start the loop to prepare for the hopefully what won't happen is if there's an injury aboard?
Well, everybody should take a CPR course because a CPR course also includes a Heimlich maneuver. And you don't have to be 70 years old to have a heart attack. That's a basic. The Red Cross used to offer a multimedia course, they called it. It was a one-day first aid course. And before I got my master's license, and I found it to be a fabulous course. It was one day. They taught you all sorts of neat things, like how to make butterfly bandages, how to use a newspaper for a splint. It was really well worthwhile. And don't forget, this kind of thing also works at home as well as in the office.
Mm-hmm. And just mention the name of the book that you recommended, please, Henry.
Oh, Marine Medicine by Dr. Michael Jacobs.
Okay, perfect. We're going to take a very brief pause right here to play a message from one of our sponsors. We'll be back in a moment.
Green Turtle Bay Marina and Resort has consistently been voted a must-stop by loopers. It has earned the coveted 5-anchor designation from Quimby's Cruising Guide. This full-service marina features over 450 slips. They are located at mile marker 31.5 on the scenic Cumberland River. Green Turtle Bay is a proud commander sponsor of AGLCA, so join them and find your waterway of life.
We're back on Great Loop Radio. My guest today is Captain Henry Marks, who is with Landfall. Henry, before we jump back into some of the safety equipment you recommend, can you just fill us in on your boating experience and how you came to be such an expert in how to stay safe while aboard?
Well, in 1947, when World War II was over, we moved back to the family home, which was on an island in Greenwich, Connecticut. And at age 7, I was banging around in boats ever since. My senior year of high school, I decided to take a little boat trip, and I took an outboard and went to Miami Beach and back. my Navy time were diesel submarines. My merchant service time was oil tankers. My dad had a big sailboat that I grew up on. And then I finally ditched the corporate world in 1981 when I picked up a 50-foot powerboat in San Francisco and brought her back to Stamford, Connecticut. And then went into the yacht delivery business on a professional basis with a master's license. I stumbled into Landfall, which is in Landfall Navigation, my company. And ever since then, we've been teaching marine safety all over the country and selling safety equipment. We're one of the leading purveyors of life rafts, medical kits, that kind of stuff, as well as navigation equipment. So I've kind of banged around boats all my life.
That's kind of an understatement, I think, Henry. But Henry, as I mentioned, and Landfall have been a sponsor of AGLCA for quite some time, and we appreciate that. And Henry is always very generous with his time and with his equipment, particularly at the rendezvous he's been to, where you've been known to put an inflatable life raft in the pool and let people climb aboard to experience what that's really like. So some of the demos you've done have been really cool, and people have really been excited by those. Tell us a little bit more. Let's kind of go into damage control. So if there is a problem aboard, what items should we have with us to handle those problems with the boat?
Well, damage control, as a friend of mine, Will Keane, who runs the Edson Company, does steering gear, says damage control is best done at the dock before you leave. Mm-hmm. And he says you need to go over the boat before you leave on the trip and make sure everything is just up to snuff. But you need a good toolkit and know how to use it. You need spare parts for your engine, your head, your generators, and any other mechanical devices you have on the boat. And I'm a big believer in manuals. You want for your engine not only the engine manual, but you want the parts manual. And the reason you want the parts manual is it gives you a schematic diagram. It shows you how to put the parts back together in the right order after you've taken them apart. Most of your marine diesel people will be able to give you a kit for your make and model engine of the standard spares you're probably going to need, fan belts, fuel filters, these kind of things. A course doesn't hurt. A lot of the courses, I know that Nautfit up in Marion, Massachusetts, does Hanson Engineering does a one-day diesel course. Mack Boring in New Jersey does a diesel course. We here at Landfall have a training center, and we have two diesel courses a year where you come and you get a lecture, and they have a diesel engine in the room. And when it's all over, they roll a diesel engine out in the backyard, and and you learn how to bleed it. We fire it up. Any of that kind of training you can get, the better. you really want to understand your gear. You understand where it is and how it works. In addition to that, through-hull plugs, you should have a tapered wooden plug for every hole in the bottom of your boat, i.e. through-hull fitting. Things like syntho glass, which is an impregnated fiberglass cloth, which is activated by salt water. If you have a hole in the boat, you put the gloves on, take the syntho glass material, just jam it in the hole so that it stops the leak and hold it there for 5 minutes. Now, if you don't put the gloves on, you just became an integral part of the boat. Hose clamps, duct tape, even a little stray lumber doesn't hurt. I'm a big believer in collision mats. I'm a sailboat sailor by trade, and we always had plenty of collision mats called sails. If you hit something in the Tennessee River and you poke a hole in the bow of the boat, a collision mat is merely a big triangular piece of heavy-duty canvas with three D-rings on it and a length of line, and you put it just like a diaper over the outside of the hole and tie it off to whatever works. And it's not going to stop the leak, but it's going to bring the flow down to the point that your bilge pumps can keep up with it until you can get the further assistance or beacher. Mm-hmm. Flashlights and batteries. Everybody should have a flashlight in their pocket. But from a half hour before sunset to a half hour after sunrise, period, you can't have too many flashlights and a bag of spare batteries. After that, each individual boat's going to have its idiosyncrasies. You don't need rigging cutters because you don't have sailboats on your power boats. But if you're going offshore with a sailboat, you need the ability to, for example, cut the rigging free if you break the mast. And each boat, again, will have its own problems. Talk to the yard that you work with and have them go over the difficult stuff. I tell a story about one of the around-the-world racing boats. And she was tied up in London, England for a week before she went, before the race started, and every night one of the members had to sleep aboard as a fire watch. Now, these guys were all happened to be former Royal Navy's Special Boat Service people, like our Special Forces. These are pretty savvy guys. Well, one of the men was assigned at the steering gear. He was supposed to know all about the steering gear. Well, the Southern Ocean, which is 55 degrees south latitude, and it blows not much less than 40 knots all the time. You got 8-10 foot seas all the time. They lose their steering in the middle of the night. Well, he pops down the hatch to go fix the steering gear as he's supposed to, and he's back on deck in about 10 minutes. And the steering's working fine. And everybody's a little surprised, and they're a little afraid to say anything. But finally they said to him, I said, well, how did you manage to do that fast in the dark? He said, remember all those nights I had to spend on the boat in London? He said, every night I took the steering gear apart and put it back together again so I know how it worked.
Well,
now, that's an extreme case. But
yep.
If you've taken this, if you know, when they work on your boat, if you're there and watch them do it, and maybe even help, it's amazing what you can learn. And when something minor goes wrong, you can fix it so it doesn't become major.
Yeah, that's great advice. And as we've said, and we always want to stress, that the Great Loop is really a very safe trip because it is mostly inland waterways. But there are, of course, a few places that you could be in some open water. Lake Michigan, of course, everybody's going to go through. And many people will cross to the Bahamas and soon potentially even Cuba. So while, again, we like to stress that it is safe and it's not likely to happen, what do you recommend loopers have with them or be prepared to do if they should happen to need to abandon ship for some reason?
I would not go to the Bahamas without a life raft and an e-perp. It's just that simple. No life raft, no e-perp, I'm getting off the boat. Because
okay.
If anything goes wrong out there, it's 60 miles across the Gulf Stream, and that's a long way to swim, then you really need an e-perp and a life raft. You can argue about personal e-perps because they make small ones for the individual. You can talk about personal AIS transponders if you fall overboard, and that's fine. But basically going offshore is a life raft, and you need to understand how your life raft works. Find out what's in the abandoned ship bag. Practice getting the thing out from wherever you stored it and getting it on deck. Make the smaller, lighter person drag the life raft on deck. Make sure they can. When you buy a life raft, the weight of the raft and the price of the life raft are opposite. The more expensive the raft, the lighter the raft. But if you've got a 92-pound Switlick life raft and you're trying to get it up out of the cabin, in 6 foot seas, the boat's rocking and rolling. This could not. You might have been wiser to buy the 50-pound Winslow, and been able to get it up the hatch. But a life raft and an e-perp are really the basics. And again, drills. One thing to put in your abandoned ship bag, and matter of fact, in any kind of a ditch bag that you have. You want a Xerox of your passport, your driver's license, a couple of credit cards, and a couple of $100 in small bills. Because if you get rescued, the chances are they're not going to deliver you to your home. They're going to drop you on a dock somewhere, and you're going to need money to get to where you need to go. So that's basically my emergency procedures.
Okay, great advice. Let's talk now about navigation. And there's, of course, the current argument over whether you still need paper charts or whether just electronic will do. So tell us your view on that.
I don't go anywhere without paper charts now. I sell charts. I don't have the 15 or 20 charts that I used to have on my boat before I got a chart plotter. What I have is a chart kit and the four major charts for the route up. I live on Long Island Sound to take me out to Block Island and back. But you really want the chart kit back up because, remember, one lightning strike and your electronics are all toast. And if you're going by St. Louis and you have a lightning strike, well, there's St. Louis, you can go in. But if you're in the middle of Lake Michigan, life might get a little more complicated. You want an up-to-date set of charts. Also, charts are a little bit like eggs. The fresher, the better. A 10-year or 15-year-old chart is probably good for wallpaper in the bathroom, but it's not so great when you're trying to go into a harbor. The waterway, the intercoastal waterway, the buoys move around all the time as storms and stuff move the channels around. I'm not a Western Rivers sailor, so I don't know how that works, but I know that pool depth seems to be the key there. But you want charts that are reasonably current. And note, for those of you with chart plotters, don't forget, in the old days when all we had was paper charts, every spring all my customers came in and said, what are the new additions for this year? Because NOAA doesn't print a new chart every year. Depending on where you are, they print them up to 4, 5, 6 years sometimes between additions. But you want the newest one. Well, now everybody buys a chart plotter, they put the chart chip in it, and they forget about it. Well, you know what? The charts on that chart chip age just like your paper charts did. So check the date in your chart plotter, because if you just bought a boat, it's got a chart plotter on there, I'll bet you the chart ship's 10 years old and the waterways may be a little different. Another book you need to have is what we call COLREGS, or CG-169. I know Chris Caldwell calls it the white book. This is a $15 book that gives you the navigation rules. It tells you what one whistle or two whistles mean when you're approaching a tugboat. It tells you to sound one prolonged blast when you're backing out of a slip. It's these kind of things. It also has lots of pictures about what all these tugboats with all those fancy lights that mean that they've got a tow that's either 500 yards long or 50 yards long, and they have different lights, and if you're trying to go behind them, it makes a difference. But you want that COLREGS book. Cruising guides are obviously important. You should have a coast pilot, but I'm not going to preach that anymore because a lot of your coast pilot information is now in your chart plotter. Tide book, if you're going to operate not in the Western Rivers and the Great Lakes where they don't have tides, but on the East Coast or in the Gulf, you want a book that tells you when it's high tide and low tide, because if you've got a bridge clearance problem and you wait till low tide, you can go under the bridge. In Maine, you got 20 more feet of bridge clearance. In the intercoastal waterway, you got a foot or two. But tide can be important and current. Binoculars, you need a good set of binoculars. The Techno Stabbies, the stabilized binoculars, are kind of nice, but they're kind of pricey. But a pair of 7x50 binoculars, a good pair like Fujinon, Steiners, or what have you, you really want a pair of those. Handheld VHF, I like to have a handheld VHF on the boat because you've got your nice radio station in the pilot house. But when somebody gets in the dinghy and goes ashore, you can call them, and you may not have cell phone coverage. AIS is something I really believe in. There's no reason today, because it only costs about $600-$700, not to have an AIS transponder on the boat, and you want the full-blown AIS. You want to transmit as well as receive. It's nice to receive and see what all the big vessels around you are doing and where they are. But what's more important is you want them to see you, and if you're not transmitting, they won't know you're there. And remember, a 50-foot boat from a steamship at 10 miles is invisible. You're just not on that radar. Radar is also a good thing, but when you go to use your radar, it's not a color television set. There's a learning curve on radar, and again, if you can get into a simulator or get on a boat with somebody who knows it, learn a little bit about it before you go charging off in the dark and the fog, because it may not work out quite the way you hoped it would. So
radar is one thing, Henry, that a lot of our members kind of have a little bit of a debate about, whether it really should be a requirement for the Great Loop or it's really more of a nice to have. Some people subscribe to the theory that they're not going to go anywhere in the dark and they'll just stay put if there's fog one morning. What's your view on that?
Well, in 1947, I sailed from Greenwich, Connecticut to Nantucket. And it was more than one day when we stayed at anchor because you couldn't see the shore from the anchorage. But when you're out there in the dark and you're out there in the fog, and both of them can come up unexpectedly, obviously you know when the dark's coming, but sometimes you don't go as far and as fast as you thought, it's real nice to be able to see what's going on out there. It's not necessary. Columbus got here without a lot of this stuff, but the casualty rates were higher in those days. It's nice if you can afford it. I do not like radar and the chart plotter all on one screen. I want two separate screens. Two reasons. The screen, if you look at your chart plotter, you get some places your screen gets awful crowded, especially if you have AIS contacts on it. You add the radar overlay on that, and first of all, the land and the radar probably aren't going to match up on the chart plotter, which is confusing. It's a very cluttered screen. The other thing, quite honestly, is if you have a radar screen and a chart plotter screen, and you have your GPS interface with both, you'll have the position of the boat on the radar, and you'll have the position of the boat on the chart plotter. And if one of the units goes down, breaks, whatever, you've still got the other one, so you've got a backup sort of. But you don't need radar, but it's kind of nice to have.
Thank you for sharing your views on that with us. We are almost out of time. Any other things you want to add, Henry, before we go about any of the safety issues or safety equipment for the Great Loop?
Well, yeah. Make sure that your partner knows how to run the boat just as well as you do, and let her or him drive once in a while, other than on the long, boring stretches, because if you fall overboard, remember, they have to come back to get you, and the better they handle a boat, the more successful this endeavor is going to be. And the other thing is, remember, you're going to have fun. Have fun. This is not a job.
That's very good advice, and especially about if you're a crew of two, both of you being able to handle the boat is so critical, not just if one person falls overboard, but if one person becomes incapacitated for any reason, which could have nothing to do with being on a boat. So, as always, great advice, Henry. I appreciate you sharing your knowledge and your time with us today. Give us your website if people want to go there for more information or to look for some of this gear.
LandfallNavigation.com.
All right, and is there the best way to reach you is through the website
best
as well?
Way to reach, the best way to reach me is two ways. My email is landfallnav, that's LANDFALLNAV, at landfallnav.com, or call me on my cell phone, 203-554-3981, and I'll be happy to answer your questions.
All right, Captain Henry Marks with Landfall, thank you again for sharing your time. We appreciate you being here. And to
thank
all
you,
our listeners, thank you for joining us again this week. We'll be back next week with another episode of Great Loop Radio. Until then, safe cruising.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Henry.